Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Hey listeners, it's Mishi. Last week we released our 50th wartime diary. This week is Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. And as a way of marking this milestone, and these dates, Yochai Maital and I will have a series of onstage conversations in New York and Cleveland. We'll discuss the process of creating wartime diaries, talk about some of the challenges we've encountered, the dilemmas we've had, the insights we've gained. So if you want to hear what covering the evolving story of this war has been like for us, we'd love to see you at one of our events. All the details are on our site, israelstory.org. And meanwhile, wishing us all calm and peaceful days ahead. So, like, when did we actually become friends, the four of us?
Wow. I don't even know.
Well, I think it centered around summer camp. You know, we were all in summer camp together from, I think,
we were like
fifth
10?
Grade?
95.
Fourth grade.
Wow, but even before that, we went on those lame hikes with Noam.
Right. 95 is seventh grade, and that's like the sleepover camp.
If you've been following Israel Story from the beginning, you might know that our show started off as this kind of side hobby of four really close childhood friends. Roy Gilron, Shai Satran, Yochai Maital, and me. A lot's happened since then, and we've grown into a large team, but at its core, one of the most wonderful things about this whole project, at least for me, is that I get to hang out with my best friends and laugh and argue and travel, and then I get to call that work. Yeah, I know how cliche that sounds, but it's true.
Tov, guys, let's do a little L'chaim, maybe.
L'chaim.
Two.
Friendship.
Two. Friendship.
Besties.
L'chaim.
Hey, I'm Mishi Harman, and from PRX, this is Israel Story. Israel Story is produced together with Tablet Magazine. And today on our show, Besties. We have three stories for you of three different pairs of best friends. Our first story today is a tale of friendship between two women who come from the most prominent dynasties in the region. Families that, for decades, were more often than not on opposite sides of wars, of military operations, of violence. Act 1, R&R. So, Ruth, I'll start with you. What do you love about Ramonda?
Everything. I even love her when she's angry and she says things that I tell her that this is not right, but I don't care because I don't care what she thinks. I really love her from the moment I really met her.
That's Ruth. She'll turn 99 next month. And she's talking about her best friend, Raymonda Tawil.
I mean, it's not, people think that when I love someone or I like someone, it's for some reason or there's a reason. There isn't a reason.
Raymonda is more than 20 years younger than Ruth. She was born in Acre to an affluent Palestinian Christian family, the Hawas.
Do you remember the first moment you saw it?
Yes, I saw that lady, beautiful blonde lady, arriving to the hospital with her car was full. I think your car was full of
The dolls.
The year was 1970, and the hospital where Ruth arrived, dolls in hand, was in the Palestinian city of Nablus in the West Bank. Now, that was unusual, to say the least. Just 3 years earlier, Israel had won the Six-Day War. During the war, Israel had conquered the Golan Heights, the Sinai Peninsula, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. There was total euphoria in the country, almost messianic euphoria. Jews returned to Jerusalem's old city, prayed at the Kotel, the Wailing Wall.
It was here that Israeli troops acted more like tourists than fighting men, obviously in awe of their surroundings.
And the territory of the tiny Zionist state was practically tripled overnight. Military generals were lauded as rock stars. And above it all stood a single man, the architect of that crushing victory.
The Wailing Wall, where Israeli Defense Minister General Moshe Dayan praised, pledging never to give up the old city.
The one-eyed Minister of Defense, Moshe Dayan, also known as Ruth's husband. And here she was, just 3 years later, at the height of a period of IDF raids against the Palestinian Liberation Organization and its bearded leader, Yasser Arafat, showing up in a Palestinian hospital, bringing dolls to the same people her husband was fighting.
I mean, it's crazy. People are dying. And she's bringing dolls. Look, Ruth, when she came to visit us the first time in Nablus, she came as a humanitarian to help the children who were, wounded, with broken legs, broken arms, whatever, wounded from the wars. She was a young woman at that time, beautiful woman. And this is Mrs. Dayan. And for us, I mean, it was a shock. What is Dayan? What kind of Dayan? She said, yes, Mr. Moshe Dayan. And she said, I am coming to help, the Palestinian children, bringing toys, medicine. What can I help? I was outbursting, shouting, God, giving me, not that we don't need your help, look. The maimed children, the hospital, the corpses. Look what is going on. And this is your husband. We told her, stop the war, stop the war, stop the war. Go and tell Dayan, stop the war, stop the killing. And she said, she asked, what do you need? Medicine, what do you need? Medical, what do you need? Equipment, what do you need? She said, we have no electricity. People are dying in the hospital. We have nothing. She had tears in her eyes. So this was our first time I met with Dayan.
That meeting, 46 years ago, was just the beginning of their unlikely friendship. Over the years, they would meet regularly, mainly in Raymonda's Nablus and Ramallah living rooms, where she liked to play the role of hostess in a sort of local version of a grand French literary salon. They would talk politics, debate, argue, all over hot sweet tea, or, in Ruth's case, her favorite single malt whiskey. Their bond changed them both, dramatically. For Ruth, it pushed her to make a very big decision.
I divorced Moshe because of the Palestinian women. And that's a fact.
For Raimonda, the friendship was even dangerous. And following many threats, she ultimately had to leave the West Bank.
People have been killed for a kind of this friendship. My life was threatened all my life.
So did you ever think that being friends with Ruth could get you killed?
Of course. Of course. Yeah. What do you think, I mean? Just say Ruth Dayan? It's easy?
Well, the difficult thing was, it wasn't always very popular, and it still isn't, for a Palestinian, especially Palestinian nationalist, to have an intimate friendship with an Israeli. And in this case, the Israeli was the wife of the great general Moshe Dayan.
That's Anthony David, a writer whose book about the two ladies, An Improbable Friendship, just came out this fall. We caught him in New Orleans in the midst of a book tour.
Ruth is considered the matriarch of the country. She's the Rose Kennedy. She's not only a woman in her own right who has accomplished a great deal, but of course she was the wife of Moshe Dayan and the sister of the former First Lady of Israel. And she also has children who are among the most prominent people in the country, including Asi Dayan, who is the Brando of Israel. The handsome, dashing, brilliant filmmaker, writer, director, producer. His sister is Yael, who was a member of parliament and has for many years been on the forefront of civil rights. So Ruth is the head of this clan that has decisively influenced Israel's history from the very beginning.
So Ruth Dayan's name is not anybody. Ruth Dayan's name, if she's divorced, whatever she is, he is the conqueror of all the Arab countries. Sinai, Jerusalem, West Bank, Golan, whatever it is. He's the enemy. But Ruth Dayan is not like this. Ruth Dayan is not Dayan. But she carries a very heavy name. Ruth?
I don't know.
Raimonda also came from local aristocracy, just from the Palestinian side.
The Hawa family has been in the country in Israel-Palestine for 500 years or more. Extremely wealthy family, Christian family that owned much of the Galilee, including a castle and villas in Acre and Haifa. When she was a little girl at the age of 8 in 1948, her family lost all of its property. So she carried that with her. In the 70s and 80s, she was this beautiful Jane Fonda of the country who was defying the occupation.
And as if all that pedigree wasn't enough, Raimonda became very closely connected to the top Palestinian leadership.
Of Raimonda's four children, Suha's one, and she, in 1991, she was moving between Paris and Tunis when she met Yasser Arafat, the chairman of the PLO, and they got married in a secret ceremony.
That's right. Moshe Dayan's former wife and the mother-in-law of his arch-enemy, Yasser Arafat, are besties.
Yeah, they're best friends, and they have been for decades. Since Raimonda is no longer living in the region, she's living in Malta and other places, in Dubai, they speak over the phone quite often. They recently met in Malta, and they maintain a very close friendship. And they share most of the values they share, even though they quarrel occasionally.
How do you become friends with your enemy, basically?
No, we fight. We fight. And we don't speak a lot for months sometimes.
And as if on cue, they got right into it. This time about the number of Israeli women at some demonstration in Nablus.
Don't think that if a woman from Tel Aviv went to speak in Nablus, that
we
Nablus, Nablus
women.
Will...
What are you talking
about? What is 100 women? You will demonstrate 100 women in Nablus? Never.
Yes.
I challenge you.
I know.
This is Nablus. You don't know Nablus. It can't be. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
You understand me. I mean, I am not saying that it's not true what you said, but I said maybe it is with a small group.
It's always a small group.
Yes, but maybe...
No, but I...
But not in
that's
the...
That's why I say I'm not political. I'm not like you.
When I scream and get my anger at her, she is better than anybody in the world. She does not react with grudge. She never reacts with grudge.
When I asked why there aren't more Ruths and Ramondas, both ladies sighed. They've been around a long time, the two of them. They've seen hope, and they've seen despair. They remember different times when Jews and Muslims and Christians could get along. Now, they're worried.
Today it's not like that. I don't think in Tel Aviv there's anyone who speaks to an Arab. Today, I don't believe in anything. You see demonstrations of 20,000 were against the occupation. What happened? Nothing. Nothing moved. Nothing moves today. And so I feel, I can't feel what she feels, but I am so angry that we haven't learned in 60 years to be like human beings. I've learned a lot from Ramonda about her life and her people, and the same I think she learned about me.
If we had Diane, Mrs. Diane, governing the country, we would have peace since a long time. She's everywhere. She's helping everywhere. She goes to the Galilee, she goes to the villages, she goes to the camps, she's everywhere. Ruth Diane, the sweetest, the kindest, the most human.
We recorded this story in Malta, where Ramonda has been living for the last few years. 98-year-old Ruth came to visit her this summer. They were sitting on the couch, and when they weren't wagging fingers at each other, they were holding hands. As difficult as it is, history, power dynamics, fear, wars, intifadas, all weighing on this friendship, there's something very simple about it. They're just two women who happen to love each other. Anthony David's truly wonderful book about Ruth and Ramonda is called An Improbable Friendship: The Remarkable Lives of Israeli Ruth Dayan and Palestinian Ramonda Tawil and Their 40-Year Peace Mission. You can find it on Amazon, where it's the number one bestseller in the political biographies category. In 1999, the Tel Nof military base near Rehovot was abuzz. It was the 25th anniversary celebration of 669, the Israeli Air Force's elite airborne search and rescue unit. There were plates full of hummus and eggplant salad, there were bowls of fresh fruit, some music, congratulatory speeches, and mainly just a lot of all-around merriment. It was a reunion of sorts for generations of soldiers who had served in the unit. All the past commanders were there, a few army top brass, helicopter pilots, extraction specialists. And then, mixed in with all these special forces, was an odd pair. Eitan Sheshinsky and Israel Uman. They looked more like sleepy university professors than heroic Air Force rescuers. And they look that way because that's exactly what they are. One's a mathematician, the other an economist. What were these professors doing there, milling around all the Air Force types? Well, that's in our next story. A story which is about rationality. About rational men. Or at least about men who are supposed to be that way. Act 2, The Center for Rationality. Here's Shai Satran.
University professors aren't, for the most part, especially well-known public figures in Israel. These two, though, they're household names. Eitan Shishinsky, the economist in the duo, recently headed two huge public committees on the taxation of Israel's natural resources. He's become a symbol of sorts, a defender of the everyman, fighting off gas and oil tycoons. His friend, Robert Israel Uman, well, he won the Nobel Prize.
It is a great honor to introduce the prize winner in economic sciences in memory of Alfred Nobel, Professor Robert Aumann.
We met at Israel's office at the Center for Rationality at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Now, in many ways, these two men are kind of opposites. Israel was born in Germany and grew up in New York City. Eitan, on the other hand, was born on a kibbutz. They differ politically, too. Israel's a hawk, Eitan a dove. They don't seem to fit together when you look at them either. Eitan is clean-shaven and secular, whereas Israel, with his long white beard, looks a bit like a Jewish sage in a children's picture book. Israel's 85 years old. Eitan is 78.
Getting to 79 in a few months.
79?
Do you remember the first time that you met?
Like two sweethearts. We don't remember the sort of the first kiss or something, no.
That's Eitan Shishinsky.
But where, I can guess, it was probably Stanford first. 65, 66, 67.
I wasn't in Stanford in the late 60s. Yes. I first came to Stanford in 71, I think.
And correcting him, that's Israel Uman.
So I think it was here, actually.
Maybe.
I think it
maybe
was here. I think maybe it here. Was here in Jerusalem. And the late 60s, something
late
like 60s. That. Yeah, okay, yeah.
While they couldn't recall their first meeting, they do remember a defining moment early on in their relationship. Eitan was giving a talk in the economics department in Jerusalem and getting some pushback from colleagues. The subject was far from Israel's field, but he spoke up anyway.
So he immediately understood and explained to everybody else. He didn't know anything about it, but he explained it perfectly.
I still don't know anything about economics.
Your Nobel Prize is in
economics.
Economics. Okay, economics. Just to make sure that you're...
Yes. Ever since, Eitan and Israel have been close, even very close. Their families vacation together, they have Friday night dinners together, usually at the Oman's because the Shishinsky home isn't kosher.
In the rarer cases that he comes to us, we have a whole set of dishes for the Oman's.
We have to invite you once again.
As we talked, Eitan and Israel were sitting side by side. They have this manner with each other that's just completely endearing. Israel puts his hand on Eitan's arm. They smile unconsciously almost when listening to the other tell stories, all of which, it is obvious, they have heard a million times before. Sometimes they mouth each other's punchlines inaudibly. It didn't take long before the conversation shifted to their favorite pastime.
We're hiking together.
Hiking.
That's a cementing that has been going on for years, here and in California.
But not only in California, also in Arizona, you know.
Arizona, you went there.
Yeah, Arizona, New Mexico.
And many other hikes on in the Sierra Mountain, in the Sierra Mountains.
Tell a story about that. We were together in the Kings Canyon National Park,
right.
Okay? And just Eitan and me. Several days we were going, right? We were going in there for several days with horses and so on.
What followed was this staggering array of outdoor adventures. There was the one with the bear who snatched Eitan's backpack.
So the bear sees Eitan running after him, and he starts running, okay? Yeah. Now, Eitan runs faster than the bear, yes? And the bear sees this, and he drops the pack, and he runs off. I don't blame the bear, because if Eitan would have been running after me, I would have dropped the pack also. So you can't see Eitan over here, but he does look a little like a bear himself. Yes.
And the time on Tisha B'Av when Israel decided to hike, totally ignoring the fast.
You can walk in the mountains while you're mourning. So we walked 10, 15 miles on Tisha B'Av. We vomited and it didn't turn out well. Dehydrated,
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everything, yeah.
So we heard a bunch of these stories, and, well...
Sounds like you have a tendency of getting into trouble together.
I don't know. We didn't get into any real... I'll tell you that time.
About Snapling, about what we do in Judean Desert. You heard nothing from nothing yet.
In the Judean Desert, there are canyons, okay? And the particular canyon that we were in is called the Chatzatzon Canyon, Wadi Chatzatzon. So they are dry waterfalls, which are basically cliffs. So you go down these canyons, and you have to rope down over the waterfall.
They reached one such cliff, which was over 100 meters high. Their longest rope, 80 meters long. So they took a detour along a ledge.
You walk along that ledge until you get to a side canyon, which is steep, but you don't have to rope it down. It's manageable.
Eitan was walking ahead. Israel was right behind him.
And Eitan, at some point, he decides to leave the ledge and climb down the steep, almost vertical canyon wall into the side canyon, okay? And I shout to him, Eitan, not there, not there, okay? And he either doesn't hear me or he makes believe that he doesn't hear me.
I don't remember whether I heard it or not. And probably he's right, I was stubborn or something, and I just continued.
And he hasn't gone more than a meter before he falls, okay? He falls into the side canyon. And he loses consciousness.
Israel rushed to Eitan's side.
What's going through your head?
I hope he lives, yeah, okay? That's what's going through my head, all right? Some time, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, a helicopter appears hovering above.
The helicopter took them directly to the hospital.
I just remember I couldn't move my lower part of the body.
He was in there about a month. You know, he had a lot of broken stuff, yes. Fortunately, his head was not broken.
Israel and Eitan were rescued by Sheshesh 669, the Air Force's rescue unit. Now, usually, when they rescue civilian hikers, it's young, reckless kids doing dumb stuff and not, you know, Nobel laureates. But from the way Eitan and Israel were talking about the saga, it became clear that this wasn't even a one-time thing.
This happened more than once?
Yes, yeah. Yes. We were pulled by helicopters a number of times. This is just one of those times.
There was another time, yeah. One other time. To Eitan it happened three times, yeah.
This was another time with him.
To me it happened twice. In the same canyon, okay? Right.
So, yeah, Omen and Shishinsky are the only couple to be rescued by 669. Twice. Hence the invitation as the guests of honor, I guess, to the unit's 25th anniversary.
And I should add that we didn't give up at this point. Yeah, having tried the Chatzatzon twice and not succeeded, yes, we tried a third time.
That time they made it all the way through. And still, I couldn't help wondering whether we shouldn't, maybe, expect more prudence from the men who, in a sense, define the very concept of rational behavior.
You think we should not have gone to this kind of event? What do you think, that we should allow the canyon to, right, to beat us? There's something I learned from you. First of all, this Chatzatzon business, it's a principle. Yes. It's a principle that I learned from you.
You fail once, you fail two. It's a system, it's the method, perseverance. You know, you stay with the goal.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
What does rationality mean? You know what rationality means? You do the best you can to achieve your goals given your information, okay? Now, our goal was to do the Hatzatzon Canyon from beginning to end. That was our goal. So you don't succeed the first time, and you don't succeed the second time. You try again, and we succeeded the third time, no problem.
Shai Satran. Our last story is about a small club. A club of two. And not one you'd really like to join. Dana Harmon brings us this next piece. Act 3, Girls' Night In.
It's Thursday night and I'm up in Einat Cohen's apartment in Tel Aviv. The Doors, Hello I Love You, is playing on an old record player. Einat, messy blonde hair, vivacious, mothering, she's wearing her favorite stripy sweater, is making sweet potato soup in her open space kitchen. Her friend, pretty Sharon Gilad, who looks a little bit like an airline stewardess, and actually she used to be one, has come over with a warm loaf of bread from the bakery around the corner. They open a bottle of Red Yarden wine, and they talk, as they often do, about boys.
I'm not dating so much. Einat is dating. I'm picky.
Picky, stay at home.
Einat and Sharon, both in their mid-40s, grew up together in the upscale suburban city of Ramat HaSharon. Although actually, to say they grew up together would be a bit misleading. And to say that they were always friends would also be wrong. If anything, they were most definitely not friends. And it's only because of some twists of fate, cruel fate, that they re-found each other a few years ago and reconnected. They first met, according to Einat, when they were tots in a Ramat HaSharon ballet class.
I think we studied ballet together.
No.
Yeah.
Ah, maybe when we were four, five.
Not five, 10, 11, 12.
The next time they crossed paths was when Sharon was in junior high, and Einat, a year older, had just started high school, and also, important, had just started dating Nir, the coolest boy in the class. For 4 years, Einat and Nir were an item. It was high school love, but it was big love. They did everything together, and everyone knew they were a couple. After high school, Nir went off to the Air Force to train as a pilot, and Einat, who'd always been active in her youth movement, headed out to the Nachal, a program that combines regular military service with agricultural or community work. She was part of a small group that was sent to Kibbutz El Rom, which everyone jokingly calls the highest kibbutz in the world, because it's in the northern Golan Heights, close to the Syrian border. That's where she met Alon. He was from the Herzliya branch of her youth movement, and now, in the same kibbutz, they found themselves getting closer. Meanwhile, when Sharon's turn to go into the military came around, she was sent to the Air Force, where she met up with her old crush Nir, who was now conveniently single. They fell in love.
When you and Nir got together, did you talk about Einat?
He said that he was his mythologist girlfriend.
The one that he remembers and loved so much, and she really hurt his heart.
Mm-hmm. Einat, you broke his heart?
I didn't know that I broke his heart.
Yeah.
Alon, says Einat, was just a friend at first. When he left the kibbutz for active duty in Gaza, he would write her long letters. He would describe what he was up to and what was going on in his heart, too. She sent him care packages filled with candy. He had a sweet tooth and updated him on the kibbutz gossip. In time, after the army, after their separate trips meandering around Asia, as so many post-army Israelis do, and back in Tel Aviv as students, that friendship morphed into love. And in 1997, 10 years after they met, Alon proposed to Einat, not with the ring, but with a Swatch watch.
We got married, and we were very best friends still, and I was very in love with him.
A year earlier, Sharon and Nir, the Air Force lovebirds, had gotten married too. So at this point, Nir and Sharon, and Einat and Alon, were two happy couples, all living in Tel Aviv. Once, early days, the two couples tried to get together, But it wasn't all that.
I remember that we went to your house once in Tel Aviv. You remember something like that? It was quite awkward. And then we decided that we don't have to be in touch.
So they left it. And time went on. Enad and Alon had two sons, Itamar and Eli, who was named for the coffee brand. And Sharon and Nir had three kids, Maya, Guy, and Nomi. Enad stopped having the occasional coffee meetup with her ex, Nir, and Sharon stopped thinking about her husband's mythological girlfriend. And everyone basically moved on, as people do. So it's not that surprising, actually, that Sharon and Nir didn't know that Enad and Alon's lives had taken a bad turn. Here's Enad.
He went karting and he came back dizzy. He didn't move away for a couple of days and he started to make a test. Why? They said maybe it's vertigo. And we went in the hospital, they sent us back, and it didn't stop. And they sent us to MRI and then we discovered that he has something in his brain. And he needs to go surgery.
For a while, they thought they could beat the cancer. Alon had operations. He did radiation. He traveled all the way to the U.S. for alternative therapies, and he went in and out of hospitals, sometimes feeling well enough to bike himself over to the emergency room and then bike home when he was released.
We keep going like it doesn't there. I mean, we did what we have to do, the surgery, the treatment, but we continue like it's something that we just have to pass and it will be okay after that.
So how old was Alon when he found out he wasn't well?
35.
And how old was he when he died?
42.
A month before Alon died, when he was already so sick he couldn't take a shower on his own or even get out of bed without help, Enat stepped out to take their older son to a birthday party. She didn't like leaving alone. She always kept her phone close. But the phone call she got that afternoon was a blow she had not seen coming. It was not about Alon at all. It was about her ex, Nir.
Nir woke up in the morning. He had a kind of a bicycle trip with his friends from the squadron.
That's Sharon speaking.
He said goodbye and didn't come back. He had Dom Lev. His heart stopped beating,
just like that?
Just like that.
How old is he?
43. Yeah.
When Enat at that birthday party heard the news, she began to cry, and she just could not stop.
I just take my boy and said that we have to go, and I really didn't know what to do. And the funeral was on Sunday, and I thought that I should come, but I could not. It was too much for me.
Enat felt empty. She felt defeated, that somehow all this death was maybe her destiny. If she had stayed with Nir, she would have been a widow. Instead, she had left Nir and married Alon, and now he was dying too, and she was about to be a widow anyway.
Did you tell Alon?
Of course. He saw me cry for like 1 week, I think. Didn't like it so much that I'm crying not for him, for someone else.
Who were you crying for, though, really?
I don't know. I think I was crying for everything. About me, about him, about Sharon, about the kids. When Alon died, I think I was shocked. I'm not crying, just shocked. It was like a dream, very bad dream. You need to do some stuff to go to funeral, to meet people. I didn't know. I don't remember nothing from the funeral. What I talk, what I did, what I wear, nothing. It was like something you have to do, but you don't. It's not you. It's not your life.
Sharon had a similar experience going through those early days of grieving.
I felt like I was the fly on the wall. I felt like I'm in a movie of my own, I guess. I don't know.
A few months after their respective husbands died, Einat and Sharon, each separately, ventured out for the first time to try and do something fun for their kids. They both chose to go to the same Hanukkah musical show, and Einat spotted Sharon in the crowd.
And then we stood before we got into the hall, and then she came to me and she said, "Sharon, it's me, Einat. You remember me?" And I didn't recognize her. So I said, "Yeah. Hi, how are you?" I heard, and then I told you, I heard about your husband, and she said, "You know, we should get together sometime."
It's not like Einat wanted to be friends with Sharon, really, she says, or thought they should be. It's more she felt she needed to explain herself, why she hadn't come to Nir's funeral or the Shiva or reached out at all. She wanted to explain somehow that, busy with her own grief, she'd had no space left for anyone else's. Sharon, on her part, wasn't that sure she felt like getting together with Einat at all. But it was really hard to say no, she says. So they set a date to meet for coffee.
I was very afraid. I remember that I was very, very tense from the meeting. I mean, we met in Ramat HaSharon, you remember? I called my friend and I told him, "You know who I'm going to meet? I'm going to meet Einat." How surreal is that? And what am I going to talk to her? I don't know. I have nothing to say to her. The one thing that makes me happy, that I'm sure that Nir is laughing. Like, really, I mean, he's laughing so much. I died and you became friends. It was worth it.
At first, their friendship was all about what they call widow stuff.
We had a lot of things that we can discuss that you cannot discuss some other people, like what you're doing with this stuff and what you're doing with the, I don't know, with these shoes, with these shirts, with these books, with these letters. We are thinking about the same thought.
But over time, that friendship moved on and took on a different pace.
I mean, I think we're now talking about the future, maybe, not the past. We're talking about now. If it's about how to meet boys, and when you meet them, what boys you want to meet, what men you want to meet, how to fall in love again, maybe.
Both Einat and Sharon say that when they lost their husbands, they also lost their best friends. Obviously, they were very sad, but they were also disoriented. The person they had each told all their secrets to and trusted the most was suddenly gone.
He was my best friend. Most of the stuff that I used to talk to him, I don't talk to anybody.
There's no replacement.
No.
At one point, only half joking, the women thought to form a little widow's club.
You remember that we decided to do once the widow evening? Because you know another widow? And mm-hmm. I have another one. And now I have another two. We continue, we'll have another three.
Whose husbands died how?
Mine died, they died in the army.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, but you have the other one also. From heart attack in the office.
Yeah, but she has a partner, so she's not widow
she's not
anymore.
In widow club anymore.
She's widow. Not. Yeah, she's not in the market.
The idea never went anywhere.
So we had like our club, very small club.
Einat and Sharon have not filled the gaping hole each of them was left with in her life, but still, they've become important to each other. There is something special there.
We share lots of stuff that happens to us.
I don't know how to say it. It's like something that...
like a drug.
Yeah, you're like a drug.
Sharon's your drug.
Yeah, heroin chic.
And that's where I leave them. Just two girlfriends from Ramat HaSharon, hanging out with their sweet potato soup, red wine, and Steely Dan, which has replaced the Doors now. They're giggling. And they're chatting about whatever, and they're listening to the rain, which has just started falling outside. And they're feeling okay. Better somehow for having each other.
יש מה?
יש לחם. היא שלחה אותי לקנות לחם.
כן, אז אולי... כמו שאני מכירה את דנה, היא
לא... דנה הרמן is a journalist for Haaretz. And that's our episode, Besties. Go share it with your best friend. And if either of you are new to the show, you can catch up on all our previous episodes. Just search for Israel Story on iTunes, Stitcher, or any of the other main podcast platforms. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all under Israel Story. Now, in case you haven't heard, we're looking for a sponsor. So if you want to support our show and reach a dedicated and rapidly growing audience, email us at sponsor@prx.org. Before we go, I want to get a really great new podcast on your radar. It's called The Kibitz Podcast, and it's hosted by the hilarious and soulful Dan Crane. Their second episode just came out, and if you check it out, and you really should, you'll hear many great pieces. And also this.
So is there anything you would change if you could go back and do your bar mitzvah all over again? What would you change?
I think I would try to maybe seize the opportunity and kiss Ganit Grey.
Wow.
I feel that you have a certain, like, you know, aura on your bar mitzvah day that maybe allows you to kiss pretty girls.
Israel Story is brought to you by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, and is produced in partnership with Tablet Magazine. Go to tabletmag.com/Israel Story to hear all our previous episodes. And thanks to Tammy Goldenberg for help with mixing today's show. Our staff includes Yochai Meital, Shai Satran, Roy Gilron, Maya Kosover, and Shoshi Shmulevitz. Amir Faktor, Itai Hyman, Rachel Fisher, and Sophie Shore are incredible production interns. This is actually Sophie's last episode with us, but don't worry, you'll hopefully hear her later on in the season. Julie Subrin's our executive producer. I'm Mishi Harman, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new Israel Story episode. Till then, yalla bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.